It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, it's time for another edition, a Valley Edition. And today I am happy to welcome into the studio Terry Snyder. Welcome, Terry.
Glad to be here, Mike.
And on the phone from Media Land, none other than Zaz Hollander. Welcome, Zaz.
Hey, Mike and Terry.
We're going to do two things, I thought. Last week we did this kind of interesting thing of looking at what would likely to be happening in a certain election that occurred this past Tuesday. Today we're looking back at that election, and the thought initially was, okay, we'll know what's happening, but not so much, because even though there has been some maybe jumping the gun, so to speak, with the Alaska legislature, particularly the House, which has broken out apparently at a 21-19 lean toward the Republican side, there are two pesky races up in Fairbanks, both for the Senate, where Scott Kawasaki is behind by 11 votes, and in the House race, it happened to be his old House district, where the Democrat in that race is behind by about 70-plus votes. I'm just curious, as you think about this, we're teetering on the edge, even though the gubernatorial race ended with a clear win for Michael Dunleavy. What's your sense of things as we look at the whole set of results? Terry?
Well, it shouldn't really surprise people. We have a lot of tight races in Alaska. We are sort of known for that and unusual things. And there were a lot of absentees. And when there's a lot of absentees and a high-profile district, this is kind of the conclusion to that. Those are not hard numbers to catch up on. It just really comes down to how the candidates did with their absentee group, and it could definitely flip or become even closer. So I don't know the way it's going to turn out. I think they're certainly, the Democrats are hoping it turns out that way, and I think the Republicans do what they normally do, and they just start and say this is the way it's going to be, and so we'll see who's right at the very end. We won't know until Tuesday.
And of course, the big question, which I've asked around, I have not yet found the answer. Perhaps either of you might have. What happens if it's 20-20 in the House?
Oh, for the bipartisan?
Oh, for just 20 R's and 20 D's and nobody blinks.
Mm. How does that work? In charge.
Yeah. Zaz, do you have any comments about this aspect of what we're talking about?
That is completely out of my wheelhouse at this point in terms of a 2020 split. But with the Kelly Kawasaki race, given what seemed like a sort of a different mandate on the state and national elections, you know, with Dunleavy having a fairly resounding win over Mark Begich, some of the other decisions, Paul Seaton getting defeated, although Louise Stutes is back in, that there. I guess I was a little surprised to see that the Kelly Kawasaki race was so close, although they really are very different politicians.
Right. It's safe to say that Kawasaki is a very energetic, younger guy. That Fairbanks area is kind of interesting. I remember looking at the map with colors that represented the results of the gubernatorial voting. And it was very clear that Mark Begich he had Western Alaska, and he had Juneau, and he had the little spot around Fairbanks. This that suggests something that perhaps helps to explain why Kawasaki was able to do what he did there.
Yeah, he worked hard.
So the other point, let's go there before we take a look at other races here in Alaska, is to look way off there at Florida and Georgia, which initially seemed to be, well, that's it. The D's came close, but they lost both the governorship in Georgia and the governorship and the Senate race in Florida, but not so fast. And once again, the focus seems to be on the Hanging Chad area, Broward County in Florida, And what I have understood is that the difficulty in part of doing recounts, et cetera, is that it may not be possible to do all the votes in the time that is allocated to do that because the machinery doesn't allow that to happen when you have this many votes. Terry, you're shaking your head. What's the game?
Yeah, well, it shouldn't really surprise us. Florida just does it differently. I really wasn't aware until this election that they don't even count uncontested races, which is different than most states, too. So I don't know what they do with write-ins and uncontested races, or maybe you don't get that option. But this is going to go on for a while. There's already lawsuits being talked about. And to me, it's just sad that, it's so important to vote and everybody's vote to count. And the combination of disenfranchising voters to not be able to vote and then not counting votes because of some statute that should have been changed long ago to allow for bigger elections is really kind of a sad statement of the way states are operating. But I don't expect any really fast conclusions in that. And I think either way that it goes, if it goes the Republican side, they're going to be screaming about, the corruption in our voting system. And if it goes the Democrat side, they're going to be upset that the votes weren't counted that clearly would have made them. And nationally, the Democrats got more votes than anybody. So I don't think there's... No, there's going to be, this is one of those situations where there's going to be somebody really, really unhappy. And so, I hate that voters are in the middle of that.
So once again, even though we've had the election a few days after, it's possible, just as in the year 2000, when the presidential race wasn't decided until December, we might see in both Georgia and Florida, depending upon what happens, either a rerun of the election in Georgia if someone doesn't have 50% plus one, all these somewhat arcane rules come into play as you look at these things. And then, of course, in Arizona, we have a back and forth where there were hundreds of thousands of votes yet to be counted that fall into that never-never land. And we see Kelly and Sinema going back and forth, one ahead, the other ahead. And of course, all of that has major implications because here is the potential for two senators to be checked off as being in the D column. And all that means.
And governor.
Plus the big one up there in Maine, of course, because Maine has found, Alaska thinks it does things differently, but Maine really does things differently because the potential there is for having people having done rank ordered voting. I vote number one, number two, and in some cases where apparent winner, it doesn't get the proper number of votes. That comes into play, and it'll be a fascinating experiment and example that maybe some other states would be interested in doing. So before we come back to Alaska again and some results that have happened here, Zaz, there's one pure state in the country. It's New Jersey, of course, where someone can win in a proper way, and I'm, of course, talking about Menendez. Any comment?
No, I was otherwise occupied in New Jersey and left the day of the election. So there were a lot of Menendez sides around, that's for sure.
Okay, we got that.
And Chris Christie might end up being the attorney general, it sounds like.
And then we have that all floating around. Chris Christie has been resurrected. He doesn't look too bad. He's been around and about and making comments. And who knows? That could happen. Well, coming back to Alaska, let's look at the gubernatorial race. Of course, obviously, both and in terms of who's going to be governor, Michael Dunleavy has won. And secondly, of course, Elise Galvin lost her race. Don Young did pretty well, but did not win. The interesting part of, I think, Dunleavy's approach is that everything that he said, he has come out basically saying, this is going to happen fast. And, of course, the appointment of a chief of staff with a well-known name here in the Valley, Tuckerman Babcock, formerly chief of the Republican Party, resigned that position, and he is working to make all this stuff happen. Tuckerman has a long history, both as a former executive with Matanuska Electric Association, and a history also that has had some turbulence associated with it. Zaz, any thoughts about that appointment and what that bodes for Alaska?
Boy, I don't know what it bodes for Alaska per se. Although Tuckerman, you know, as chair of the party and before that with his role at MEA was fairly straightforward in his ambitions for the state. I don't know. I haven't covered enough elections to know whether, you know, naming a party head, how common that is. Mm-hmm. You know, for a new governor to be that kind of blatantly partisan. And Tuckerman, you know, in his role, obviously has a lot of political experience, but not necessarily, or not in the executive, apart maybe from traveling down to Juneau to lobby on behalf of MEA when he was there. When he was at MEA, I mean, that was when I first got to know him, so that was in the early aughts, say 2002. He was there before then, but that's when I started talking with him. There was, I don't know if scandal is the right word, but quite a bit of consternation that MEA had sort of become a branch of the party because there were so many fairly influential Republicans housed there. And Tuckerman obviously was involved in that conversation.
Terry, comment?
Yeah, I mean, it's you kind of know that these things were all agreed to before the election took place, and the deal-making was really done before that. He has proven to have a lot of power. I'm thinking somehow that he did work in Juneau even as a staffer some time ago. So he is he is absolutely familiar with the landscape. It does make me wonder if we're just going to be having campaign season 12 months of a year, if you're going to have that person as head of your in the building there. And he's pretty well known for twisting arms when he has to. So that's a good way to keep everybody in line, I suppose. But I think it was all pretty much preordained. Dunleavy was ready to make this announcement the day after he was elected. Not a lot of talk about a transition team at all, which is normally what a governor talks about. And then it's kind of a little more thoughtful process. Even if it's not, it looks like a more thoughtful process. But this looks like, okay, let's get it done. He announced it at a gathering in the mining association. So the payback for campaigns is going to happen quickly here.
Well, just to show my age, I know that Tuckerman Babcock was involved in the legislature way back in the day.
Yeah.
But you'd have to go back to when Kurt Menard was senator.
Right, that's
right. Because there was, you'd have to go back then because Menard switched parties.
That's right. Was he staffer for Menard?
Yes.
Okay.
Briefly. For that time. Mm-hmm. And did not like the switch, as I remember.
Yeah.
So he's had experience and, of course, obviously has continued on in the political experience as well as other experience with MEA and so on. So it's going to be interesting. It'll be an interesting next few days. Of course, once again, we remind listeners that all of this is predicated upon having both a Senate and a House that is sympathetic to proposals coming out of the governor's office. And should there be a 2020 split, which will require some very interesting dance in the House, it'll be a different thing. And if Pete Kelly, who was formerly the president of the Alaska State Senate, loses that position, then the very least will be some very interesting shakeup in terms of leadership, et cetera, bringing someone else into the fold. And also because there are moderate senators in the Alaska State Senate, it will be an interesting play to see whether perhaps some form of different arrangement will occur with a different kind of coalition. Coalitions have happened in both houses there.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, there are definitely going to be a lot of changes to committees. Anna Fairclough is off the Senate, did not run for re-election, and she had a very powerful position on Senate finance, so that will have to be filled. So I haven't heard too much about those committee appointments yet, and I think they're all pretty much counting that Mr. Kelly will be back, but we'll see.
Okay.
Stay tuned.
Well, let's also bow in the direction of the group of people who represent the Valley in Juneau. As expected, everyone who ran was reelected. Possibly the one race that was a little bit surprising was Delina Johnson, who's returned to the House, beating handily Eileen Patterson, who had appeared to have been running a very spirited campaign.
Right.
But that's no changes there, as we can see. Of course, we have to also mention one of the Proposition 1 that was on the ballot did go down resoundingly. It was defeated, and I'm not sure that puts to rest the issues associated, especially in this particular climate, because what we're seeing here is there was a very large group of people who I think, and I think they represented arguably economic forces for development, that said no on one, and also, I believe, supported Mr. Dunleavy. So as we move forward, the real question is, will the legislature in any way revisit those issues mm-hmm. associated with protecting salmon when development occurs? We just don't know that at the moment. The other interesting one, the one that I found fascinating, was Judge Corey. Mm-hmm. Of all the judges listed there, was the only one that was defeated in his bid to be continuing as a judge. Zaz, any thoughts about that one?
Yeah, so that was the judge who presided over the Schneider case. This was a gentleman who very briefly picked up a woman, and you know, she said he was giving her a ride someplace else. But he ended up strangling her and masturbating over her while she was kind of semi or unconscious. That, under Alaska statute, does not constitute a sex crime at this point, although there is now a push to change that, or at least a comment that needs to be changed. But so it was Corey who presided over the sentencing for this gentleman, Schneider, who ended up, I believe it was a year on house arrest. And there has been a great deal of outcry at the, you know, the leniency of that sentence. And it was Corey who was really castigated for it. There are a lot of other moving parts in any sentencing decision. There's a prosecutor involved, and there are state laws involved. But it was the judge who became the focus of this repeal, or rather vote no campaign on Facebook and in other places. And a successful one.
Yep.
And it's the
first
only
judge to be voted down in election history.
Yeah, and it's the only judge, really, that had any type of organized opposition to him, right?
Yes. There wasn't. Yeah, there were a few others, that, as usual, that there were some concerns about, but he was the only one with this overt vote no campaign.
And my understanding, and I followed it as closely as I could, reading the pro and con articles that appeared quite often, I didn't see anything that was going to say this particular action on his part represented a pattern of behavior.
Yes. And his wife even posted something in our paper, an opinion
right.
piece,
mm-hmm.
As to how she was a sex assault survivor, and he's been incredibly supportive through all that. And you would think on the bench he couldn't help but have compassion in the back of his mind.
Yeah.
Because of that experience, yeah.
Well, this may not be the end of it, because the implication is that we're going to see some action that would not have the next judge who's faced with a similar situation be also castigated because they had to follow the guidelines that were there. And of course, there is still remaining that question of whether there could have been something further presented and the prosecution could have handled things a little bit differently, et cetera, et cetera. But a very, very strange, as you're pointing out, Zaz, and different result in electing judges.
I think the whole question of crime and how they're going to deal with it, because that was certainly a big topic of discussion on who had the better plan to deal with crime. And it will be interesting to see if Governor Dunleavy talks about getting more police on the street and how he goes about funding that. Doesn't seem like that has been the whole problem with getting troopers hired. It's part of that has been money, the right amount of money to offer them, but also benefit packages. And he hasn't been reticent to say that that should change in any way. So that will be sort of an interesting see on what they come up with. And if there is as much talk as there was on the campaign trail about prison reform and that sort of thing, because all that now, all of a sudden that takes money. And meanwhile, There's a whole pack of people waiting for their back payment on PFDs. That's going to be the number one thing that they want to see. And whether that can be pulled off in what is, he is promising, a very fast pace, it all remains to be seen.
So, Zaz, you have returned after you have been in the East, to the East mm-hmm. Coast. What kind of breaking kind of stories or stories have you found as you've returned that have grabbed your attention?
Well, the stories I'm working in stories that grab my attention, unfortunately, are two different things. There have been a number of two homicides this week in Anchorage that I need to write about. I guess those can't help but be attention grabbing and so kind of overwhelming right now. But there are, you know, any number of other stories that are hanging out there. The fate of our port here in Mat-Su, which still has no vessel traffic and an ongoing construction contract. And I've been told that our newspaper does not get a tour out there to see what's going on, that we've been out there before, so we don't need to go back. And there's just some other, you know, issues that are kind of hanging out there with, you know, the whatever happened with the truck load that hit the overpass in the Glen Highway and snarled, you know, tens of thousands of commuters or hundreds of thousands probably after a few days. Still looking for some follow-up information on that. Mm. But in happier news, Martin Boozer is a movie consultant on a new Disney movie, not about Balto, but about Togo, the true canine hero of the serum run.
Sweet. That's some good news.
Oh, that's...
I hate to backtrack, but I've been following a little bit the gardener that was found deceased at the Alaska Zoo, and that one's kind of got a curious, how did that happen?
Yeah, I think there's something more going on with that, and very little information being released right now, but definitely an unusual case.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, all right. So the other questions, of course, have to do with weather. We finally broke through and had snow. It was delicious while it lasted, and it's still upon us, but coming soon to a place where you live are temperatures in the 40s, rain, and some of that great skiing that was available up at the Government Peak Recreation Area is not going to be so great. They've closed it, actually, until they get better conditions. And up the highway to the area that we also provide news to, we're talking about Glacier View. They're still saying that hiking is a good thing with a little bit of snow. But they're...
I worry about all of these people out on the ice already, ice skating, and it makes me a little bit nervous because we did have some cool weather. But, boy, those, I can't believe we have much ice even in the lakes that are frozen.
And, yeah, it's not thick enough yet for safe travel.
And while there was a burst of enthusiasm and good feeling because with some snow, it was possible to begin training dogs on snow for the Iditarod and other races, I noted that at least until recently, perhaps there's been an uptick, there's been a rather low number of people who have signed up for the Iditarod next year.
Still, yeah, what is the news on the Iditarod? Is there anything new?
Not that I know of.
I haven't seen anything break since a few days ago, but all I know is at that time, relative to other years, maybe not as many, but that could change, and we'll be talking about that, of course, in some detail. So, Terry, any last comments before we finish up?
I don't think so. It was an exhausting week for a lot of people, and hopefully we'll put some more positive energy into the atmosphere here and get on with getting ready to get for the holidays and be able to enjoy things a little bit better.
I can tell you that I did notice, though, being in town here, there was part of the nationwide protest, and it was outside the depot, against the appointment of the acting Attorney General of the United States. And that apparently was nationwide, and we had representation here in Palmer. That did happen. Zaz, any last comments?
Well, I just hope it doesn't rain, I guess, is all. Since it's winter here, I came from 50-degree New Jersey to a really nice 10 inches of snow here up toward Hatcher Pass. And, boy, you know, if it's going to be winter, let's just keep it that way.
Yeah, keep the ice away.
Well, thank you both. Zaz Hollander on the phone. Thank you, Zaz.
Sure thing.
And thank you, Terry Snyder, for being in the studio today. Thank you, Terry.
All right. Have a good weekend.
And we'll be back next week with another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.